All right. Let's get fired up here.
Maximum freedom. Read.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom. Read Rothbard.
Well, hello and welcome to the Actual Anarchy Podcast. This is the podcast where we talk about movies from a Rothbardian anarcho-capitalist perspective. And tonight we're continuing the October Halloween horror type films and going to the master of horror, Alfred Hitchcock, or the master of suspense, rather. And this is going to be an episode on Psycho, the original from 1960. It should be a lot of fun. We have an exceptional guest returning to join us for this one, and I think this will be a lot of fun. You can find the show notes and more for this one at actualanarchy.com/256. And before we get into the last narrative portion of the show and introduce our guest, let's check in with Robert. I know the suspense has been killing you, but how are things going up, going on over there? You in your hoodie wearing your human face mask, which I think will be the scariest costume of all this upcoming Halloween season.
I'm sure anybody seeing this now is terrified, suitably. Yes. So unfortunately, this is how I roll. It's too late now to complain. I don't care. You can complain all you want. I won't listen. How are you, Daniel? Good to see you, buddy.
Well, it's good to be seen. Just wave your hands in the air like you just don't care. I am wearing my very scary costume that says libertarians are such elitists that we think that we control our lives, our own lives, better than the government can, which I think will scare a lot of the progressives that, live around us at present. It's a little scary.
That is terrifying. The idea that people have responsibility for their own lives is terrifying.
Bodily autonomy, agency. Such things are very scary terms, I think, these days. I don't think they're teaching them in those government schools. But we are going to have quite a show tonight. And I think this is one I've been looking forward to for a while now. The last time that we had this guest on was for the movie Jaws. And that has some very iconic musical moments, as does this one, Psycho. So
there's definitely a lot of
a lot of good stuff. I'm loosely connecting the movies that we've been doing that Kevin Bacon thing like we did on Swing Kids mm-hmm. by way of North or South Korea, and that was a really good episode we did last week. A different type of horror, the horror of getting a population to turn in against itself, and this one's a little bit different, but I think it'll still be really good.
Oh, yeah. The two movies are the same. This one is completely different. But fortunately, we've got Bobby here to navigate our suspenseful waters.
All right. Cat's out of the bag. The suspense is over. It is Snobby Bobby of the You Know For Everyone podcast. Who will we be bringing on in just a moment after the last night's music rolls now? Hello, good evening, everyone. I'm trying to do my Alfred Hitchcock, but I haven't actually boned up on how he speaks. But I'm introducing the show. We are The Last Nighters. You can find us at lastnighters.com, also on the Liberty Movement's YouTube channel. And this is our episode on Psycho, episode 199 of the show. And you can find the show notes more at lastnighters.com/199. And 199, are you out of your mind? We have a special guest. He is Snobby Bobby of the Not For Everyone podcast. He has been on with us a couple of times in the past, most recently for Jaws. And prior to that, he was on for Demolition Man. And I think his initial appearance with us was for The Patriot, the Mel Gibson classic film that was on the 4th of July, Independence Day, like last year. And Bobby, have you been on for anything else? It escapes me in my old age. I am forgetful and old and ugly and all of these things. But welcome back, Bobby.
Thanks. Yeah, we were on. I did Contact with you guys. I did Big Trouble in Little China. I can't believe you forgot that one.
Wow, man.
I can't believe you forgot that either.
I can't believe
Having some Biden moments.
Robert hasn't forgot that one.
It's my favorite movie of all time.
There's no way I can forget. Me too, buddy. Me too. I think that's it, though. I think that's all I can think of right now. The Patriot's okay. Probably the best movie that we've watched, that we've covered, though.
Better than Demolition Man.
Better than Jaws?
No. I think I like that, you know, we did Jaws, which is an iconic masterpiece, and I think that, spoiler alert, we're about to talk about another one of those. Thanks for inviting me back.
Yeah, well, thanks for being willing to be back.
I'm just in my house, but yeah, that's cool.
Well, virtually back.
Yeah, yeah.
But you'd be willing to come back and talk to a couple of knuckleheads.
I'd be playing like PGA right now if I wasn't here, so.
Okay, well, I'm glad that you've allotted your scarce resources and allotments of time to us versus playing PGA.
A lot of irons in the fire.
Literally. All right, well, let's get into this this episode here. I've got the Google description pulled up now. So, of course, we're talking about the very scary film. That's not the right one.
Fauci.
Was that on purpose?
Is that the 3%?
Yeah. This is the one that got some 92% Rotten Tomatoes, 70% Metacritic, but 5% of Google users like it. What we're actually talking about, I guess because this other title was already taken, they had to use the guy's last name for that other film that I had up, even though they've already done a remake of this one. But similar to last week where we did Swing Kids and then another film of the same name got made. I think that they had to shy away from calling the movie that just came out on Disney Plus also Psycho, because there's so many other Psycho iterations already.
Yeah.
Right. They had to go with a more unique title. I understand.
Yeah. Yeah. Lest people get confused or think there's some flip-flopping or changing of statements, things.
Because like anyone, Gaslight either.
Has anyone seen the latest Psycho?
They're going to say the latest Fauci documentary.
Because I imagine it's some sort of a puff piece of some kind of a masturbatory honorific.
The 1998 one?
No, the one that just came out.
2021. Like Disney Plus Psycho? Masterpiece.
Oh, that one. Yeah. No, I have not seen that.
Yeah.
I don't plan on seeing it. It does seem like a horror movie of some kind.
I canceled my Disney Plus for some reason. Something pissed me off.
I'm tempted.
And, and it was always like, they're like, why are you canceling? Like, if other, please describe. And I'll just be like, commie horse shit. And submit. I like to troll the Disney folks. Michael Eisner, I hope you saw that.
Yeah, he's still around. He's been around. I don't know. Anyhow, how we start this off is with the old Google description. So here we go. Psycho, the original, came out in 1960, starring Anthony Perkins, Janet Leigh, Vera Miles, John Gavin, Martin Balsam, Pat Hitchcock, and of course a cameo, or is that what you call it? A cameo? Background appearance by the director
cameo.
He put himself in all his movies.
Yeah. He's got like a little
Stan Lee.
Yeah. Oh, you know, yeah, he's got a Stan Lee cameo.
He's gonna make an appearance on our show right about now. Look.
Oh, there he is.
Upper right hand corner, he's making his cameo appearance. Now, apparently, he made his appearance early on in Psycho so as not to distract the audience from getting into the story. Also, I was reading the Wikipedia, and apparently, prior to Psycho, moviegoers would just go into get into a theater, and they'd go in mid movie and then continue to watch to the next screening or whatever. And so it was a lot of come and go. But Hitchcock had contracts signed so that people would not be able to enter after the picture started. And so it actually changed how movies are consumed going forward. And those things have kind of stuck to this day where you only get, you know, the one showing, and they, I don't know if they restrict entry anymore, but you know, it's a more time bound experience than it used to be. Apparently.
You used to be able to just show up whenever. And if you caught it in the middle, whatever, I'll just stick around and watch the first half after the first running is done. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah, it seems like it would be kind of weird for a movie that you would have to learn the story as it's unfolding. But
yeah, especially for suspense and mystery movies, that would completely ruin the experience, you would think.
Yeah, but I mean, that's probably why he insisted on that kind of being the case. And it stuck around since then. So description reads, Oh, wait, I didn't do the scores yet. 8.5 out of 10 on IMDb, 96% Rotten Tomatoes, 97% Metacritic, and 88% of Google users like it. I think they had 88% last week, too. Phoenix secretary Marion Crane, played by Jamie Lee Curtis's mother, on the lam after stealing $40,000 from her employer in order to run away with her boyfriend, Sam Loomis, is overcome by exhaustion during a heavy rainstorm. Traveling on the back roads to avoid the police, she stops for the night at the ramshackle Bates Motel and meets the polite but highly strung proprietor, Norman Bates, played by Anthony Perkins, a young man with an interest in taxidermy and a difficult relationship with his mother. Release date, September 8, 1960, directed by Alfred Hitchcock. Based on a novel that came out a year prior, so it went quickly from a novel to a movie, and it had a box office of $50 million. Robert, your opening bid for Psycho.
Well, the classic movie Psycho. Watching this, I think it was probably, probably the third or fourth time in my lifetime that I've seen this movie. And I mean, since it's a suspense thriller film, you really, I think you can only, it's best served once. Repeat viewings, it loses a bit. You can appreciate different things upon repeat viewings. But of course, a lot of this movie is a mystery. It's definitely played like a mystery. You don't know who, when you're wondering when you're going to see this mother character. Why aren't they showing her to us? And then find out what she's actually going to look like or what she's actually doing. Then we find out she's been dead for 10 years. And what's actually going on? But if you already go in knowing all that suspense is nothing. And it's a movie, I think, that suffers a little bit from its success. Like, a lot of people know this movie. It's been, you know, copied, or it's been in the zeitgeist a lot. Like, a lot of, even if you've never seen the movie, you know, like, the shower scene. Or you know, you've heard the name Norman Bates before, and you kind of know that he's like a crazy person or something like that. So it kind of takes the edge off the film. But, you know, I'm fine with movies being time capsules. This movie was made to thrill 1960s audience, and it probably did that incredibly well. When you first watch this movie, it's got some great, like, he is the master of suspense. Things move very, very slowly in this movie. It's like a very slow boil, and then they kind of come at you really quickly. I don't know how well the jump scares and that kind of thing affects a modern audience, because I'm not, like, I'm watching this movie for the fourth time. I know the things are coming. I don't know how a fresh-eyed millennial would react to seeing this film, but I know how I reacted to it. Just more like appreciating the craft. So I think this is a very well-made movie, but it's not something that's really gonna, you know, hit really hard upon repeat viewings, just due to the nature of it. But you can appreciate all the acting and the directing and the way the story is made. It's pretty good stuff. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it as well. And you're right, it is one that kind of suffers from people kind of having awareness of it even before they've seen it. And I guess it's because it's so classic and it's such a genre-defining film. I think it was considered one of the best, like, top 10 horror films in, you know, recent, like, top lists from IFC and other such ranking type places. And it is also referenced so much that you can't really go into this not knowing the spoiler, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a little bit unfortunate that is sort of lost on us.
Yeah. And for anyone that's willing to, you know, revisit this one, I think it's important. I found myself kind of insisting that I view this through the lens of, like, never having seen it or not knowing the twist and things like that. It's a much different film if you pretend that you don't know all those things, right? Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, Daniel.
No, totally, totally fine, as it's totally appropriate for the type of show that we run here. But there is enough to lead a naive viewer, an unaware viewer, to believe that the mother is there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the different story that I think, or the different voice that I think sounds like Anne Ramsey, actually, from The Goonies. But apparently it was actually a blend of three different voice actresses. overlaid each other to get that voice, so that it wasn't actually any one person. The wonders of reading the Wikipedia. But anyway.
Reliable source.
Reliable source. Well, yeah, actually, there was someone was on Rogan recently who was talking about how the Wikipedia is just so corrupted now. That you can't.
It's not straight and narrow like Snopes.
Yeah, it needs to be fact checked.
Politico. Hard. Yeah.
But yeah, Robert, I think that you're right. That is a really strong point, and I think that is one of the reasons why the Vince Vaughn version was not received well. Not only that, but there are some key differences, and I ended up watching both, and I also watched Psycho 2 last night.
Are you talking about Gus Van Sant?
Yeah, the Gus Van Sant version, which I have some differences between the two, which I want to get into. Robert, if you haven't seen that one, I think the discussion will be sufficient.
Okay, and if good.
Don't waste your time.
Because I have not.
You already have seen it, only the better version of it.
Yeah, you've seen the better version, for sure.
Okay.
And then
was there a reason for Gus Van Sant to do a complete remake? Like,
I didn't get into the reasons for it.
I think it was like just a gimmicky homage kind of thing. They're like, let's see what happens. And then this movie has so much Hitchcock soul and imprint and fingerprint all over it that you can't recreate that. And it just was not received as well.
Right.
You know,
and even a lot of the like frame
and I love Vince Vaughn
and shot for shot is very similar in it.
Is Vince Vaughn the
Norman Bates?
Norman?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he is.
It's a sadistic, interesting watch, I guess. If you're into like sadomasochism on a Saturday afternoon, you want to just kind of see what it's like to watch that movie. But
is this a young Vince Vaughn or an old Vince Vaughn?
It's like 98.
Very young.
Okay, fairly young Vince Vaughn. Okay.
Post Swingers, pre old.
Okay, so he could pull off a Norman Bates kind of age.
Oh yeah.
More or less. Okay.
And then also part of this recording, I watched Psycho 2 last night, mostly because I read the premise of it. And I was like, damn, that sounds awesome. It doesn't quite deliver, but.
Okay, give me the rundown. Give me the rundown.
About it. All right.
What's the premise of Psycho 2?
The premise that hooked me was this. Norman Bates pleads insanity, gets institutionalized. 22 years later, he's now deemed sane. And so they release him back out into the public, and he still owns the motel, and some sleazy guys turned it into a drug den, prostitution roadside attraction. And so he's nonplussed about that. But and this is a bit of a spoiler reveal, but the surviving sister of the lady killed in the shower scene in the original Psycho hates Norma Bates so much that she makes it so it appears that Norman is going crazy again by leaving notes and placing phone calls. And
oh, she gaslights him
as the mother. Yes. Gaslights
him
in hopes to make him snap, but she actually commits murders in the process and makes Norman think that he's actually done these things.
Oh, so she Jason Voorhees's mom's it sort of
something along those lines. Yeah. Yeah. So the goal is to get Norman Bates back institutionalized or in jail for the crimes
but committing
worse or similar crimes herself. So the premise was really cool.
I find Psycho 2 to be one of the great unsung sequels of all time, and especially for a movie that didn't need a sequel to begin with. I thought that it was, you know, if you go in watching Psycho 2 as if it's like in a vacuum, as if like the first Psycho didn't exist, it's a completely, you know, above average film, I think. It's not nearly close to the first one. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like The Misfits with Michael Graves. It's like if you think of this band as not being The Misfits, it's just a separate entity on its own. It's fine. It's fine. Anyway.
Yeah. When did this Psycho 2 movie come out?
1982.
Oh, okay. This is an old movie. Over the
mountains. Jennifer Tilly's sister.
Meg Tilly.
Jennifer Tilly's sister is her name, I think.
Yeah, I think officially. That's her official title.
Yeah.
And
Megan, maybe
it's 22 years later, you know, filmed this original one was 1960. So Anthony Perkins is probably in his late 40s, early 50s when it's made.
And, he plays in it. He's in it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And so is the lady, Vivian Lee. I think that's her name, right? Or, no, Vivian, just had it.
Janet Lee. She's dead.
Vera Miles, who plays the sister character plays the sister again and tries to get Norman Bates to think he's crazy, which is really kind of clever and evil and a very interesting premise. However,
who directed it?
George something.
But the shower, nobody's heard of him.
I'm sure somebody's heard of him, but I haven't. Okay. Other than, I'll tell you in a moment here.
It's better than it should be. Is
Richard Franklin. Richard Franklin.
Okay. No idea.
All right. Here it is. 2 decades after the original murders at the Bates Motel, Norman Bates completes his treatment at a mental institution and returns home to find his hotel run down under the management of Warren Toomey, played by Dennis Franz. Despite a new friendship with a waitress, played by Meg Tilly, and a job bussing tables at a diner, Norman begins to hear voices once again. No matter how hard he tries, Norman cannot keep Mother from returning and coaxing him to unleash the homicidal maniac within.
So I assume at the end of the film, he does go all full Mother mode and start slashing people up. But then it's kind of like justified because he's like the anti-hero.
The ending is a little weird.
Okay.
The ending is a little weird. So it's revealed that the sister, Vera, has been concocting this with her daughter to make Norman feel crazy. So the daughter befriends Norman.
Wait, is this movie played as a mystery? Like the audience doesn't know that this is Vera doing everything?
Yeah.
For a while, it's kind of revealed, right?
Okay.
But then Vera like sneaks in to, you know, near the end to like continue to harass Norman. And she gets a knife shoved down her throat and comes out the back of her neck. And you're like, whoa, a bit graphic here. And also a similar thing happens to the psychiatrist guy who had been helping Robert Loggia. Actually, he's great in this. And so, you know, something's going on because Norman couldn't possibly have done it because he's locked up in the attic when one or both of these things happens. And Meg Tilly is like feeling remorseful about making Norman go crazy again because she's grown a fond of Norman. And hilarity ensues. She gets shot by the police because in her efforts to try to talk Norman out of the delusions, she dresses up as Mother to command him to stop thinking that it's Mother on the phone. Anyway, it's probably worth seeing, actually. It's probably worth seeing.
Okay.
I recommend Psycho 2. I really do. I actually, non-ironically, very much enjoy that movie.
Yeah.
Was this movie post
9/11?
Hitchcock's death? No.
That's a great question. I would imagine.
So. I want to say,
I don't think Hitchcock made it into the 80s. I could be wrong.
Yeah, let's see. I'm going to click on a link here, and he died. He died in 1980. So yeah.
Mm.
Okay. So he did not live to see this.
No. Yeah, he did not see this. And spoiler, Robert. Okay. If you're going to watch it, I'm not going to spoil it. There's
you just go ahead, Daniel. Spoil everything in this show. It's whatever.
The whole show is
spoiled. These movies have been out for decades.
Decades. If you haven't seen it now, it's your fault. All right.
Almost 40 years.
Apparently, it's revealed that Norma Bates, the mother that is in the original here as a, you know, corpse,
yeah,
is not the real mother.
Oh.
Not Norma's real mother. She is the sister of the woman who had Norman as a young, unwed woman who had mental difficulties of her own, mental you know,
women.
Yeah. And apparently she had, I guess,
gave
Norman up. Yeah. To the sister. And she, of course, was awful to Norman. And so Norman poisoned her with strychnine and her man friend.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the end of Psycho 2, this woman who was the waitress or a waitress at the diner he starts working at reveals herself to be his actual mother. And so that's a plot twist, right?
Mm.
But by this time, Norman is full blown crazy again, and he offs her.
Oh, shit.
Starts the cycle all over again with preserving her body.
He can't stop killing his mom. That's what he does.
And yeah. So Psycho 3 and 4.
Do not go to Norman Bates and reveal that you are related to him in any way. Just don't do it. It's not
a good idea. He's not happy about this. 23andMe. He's not a good thing for a Norman Bates or any relative.
Don't let him know his ancestry.
Yeah. All right.
Then he's in Bill Gates' database if he does that too. So be careful there.
Yes. I've had concerns about that myself.
You're on the right show.
Yeah. I will not submit. Anyway, we're here to talk about the Alfred Hitchcock version of the film. And so Bobby, I know that you are a big fan of indelible films. Jaws is one of those. Demolition Man is one of those. Big Trouble in Little China is
Jaws, Demolition Man.
The Thing.
The Thing. So you're a big Carpenter guy. Spielberg, obviously master at his craft, and
Demolition Man.
I think Hitchcock is one of those guys that we've been meaning to discuss. He has a very definite style and mm-hmm. method and look and feel to his films.
Yes.
And I think that it's worthy of discussion, and I'm surprised we haven't talked to him about him earlier. There are some YouTube videos about directors and their styles, and their little 15 to 20 minute things, like, hey, here's the five things about this director. And I'll try to find one of those, put it on the show notes page, because it's always,
and there's probably 50 or 60 about Hitchcock. So I mean it's really hard to narrow when you're researching this film. It's really hard to narrow down all the points you want to hit on as far as Hitchcock's impact on things, so and this movie in general. So did you want me to do opening?
Yeah, you do your opening blast in the face, Bobby.
Halfway into the show here.
What's that?
We're halfway into the show. Yeah. Go.
Well, I mean, I wrote a whole monologue.
Let's hear this monologue, Bobby.
Yeah. Which I was fully counting on, actually.
Yeah. I mean, it's my only notes, so I got to go with it. We got to do it. We got to just purge it right now. Blow my load. Blow my Hitchcock load in one fell swoop.
Blow your load out your Hitchcock. I'm going to make you full screen.
All right. If you'd like to make a case for market competition breeding ingenuity and everything from art to commercial products, look no further than the macrocosm that is Alfred Hitchcock. To film, he is what Mozart is to music, what Bernays is to propaganda, and what Nancy Pelosi is to making me want to punch drywall.
Or front run.
Hitchcock is everything. A timeless trailblazer whose work spans six decades, the undisputed king of auteurs, he set the bar for the modern thriller and horror genre by exploring the darkness of mankind without the use of mad scientists, spirit-gummed lycanthropes, or awkward saucers on fishing line. With The Birds as a possible exception, his films are human, and they are meant to be human. From the complex and often flawed, id-driven characters to the masterful manipulation that he demands sympathy of his audience. Often imitated, but never outdone, you simply can't fuck with Hitchcock. Arguably, the peak of his resume is 1960's Psycho, which pushes the envelope of genre film, perfectly balancing pop and culture. Iconic, thoughtful, meticulous, scary, and engaging, Psycho set the bar so high for the modern thriller, I challenge you not to recognize its influence in everything from top-tier masters like Brian De Palma to Hollywood hacks like M. Night Shyamalan. A violent yet tasteful date with derangement, Psycho is a perfect film that explores the independent, impulsive damsel and take the incel from mom's basement to a Jungian-style archetype via Freudian observation. Simply put, the dangerous soy boy with any remorse disposed and projected onto his upbringing. It has and will continue to stand the test of time. If you're looking to hit all the boxes, acting, script, performance, story, visual mastery, score, Psycho is a pretty fucking good place to start. Does Robert agree? Tune into The Last Nighter / Actual Anarchy to find out.
Wow. You got to be a writer, man.
That's all my notes.
Well, honestly,
let's
that's
fucking
all.
Party.
That's all you need to say. That's all you need to say. Robert, do you agree? Is this a masterful film? Is this a masterclass in suspenseful film?
You just have to look at all the how many people are influenced by this movie. You can't. I mean, it's hard to look at it, 61 years later, and have grown up watching all the people who were influenced by this film. Like, I grew up on horror movies. I don't know if you did. You watch a whole bunch of horror movies with me back in the 80s? I don't know if you did, but I know me and my sister, we grew up watching Hellraiser and Freddy and Jason and every good and bad horror movie that came out of the 80s. Phantasm. And
I'd like to plug Not For Everyone podcast to Robert right now.
Yeah.
Do you talk about those movies?
Oh yeah.
Do you ever get into Hellraiser? And
we did Hellraiser 2 last Halloween.
Poltergeist? Japanese... Have you done Poltergeist?
We haven't. We're trying to do kind of a little more obscure stuff, but we have done Hellraiser 2. Wait, no, Hellraiser 3, the one with the CD Cenobite.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's a good one. Anyway, sure it is. Back I'm to sure Psycho.
I'm sure it's great.
Yeah, they do a lot of canon films, a lot of B-League. It's good. Mm-hmm, it's good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm. But yeah, it's you know, kind of in the way... for me, it wasn't... I mean, since I've already seen it in the way it is, as it's like a mystery suspense movie, its effect is a bit lost on me. But you can still see the craft. Now, if I rewatched a movie like Casablanca, then... You know, you can appreciate pretty much every last bit of it. But this movie, it's still phenomenal in that it was probably amazing for its time. And it's still great. But having influenced an entire generation of filmmakers.
An entire industry.
Yeah, I've gotten bits and pieces and I've gotten it recycled over and over again in the movies I've watched. So it doesn't seem so... amazing because I've seen it all so many times, right
it's almost like the Elvis Presley effect. It's like this was incredibly influential to everything we listen to that we almost take it for granted now, and it's just like part of the zeitgeist, part of the culture now,
right? But this is just how you do it.
It's very important to watch old movies under the like context and under the, you know, the lens of
this. Nothing existed before
the time
this. He's creating stuff here.
I mean, you had your like film noirs and you had like Fritz Lang and guys like that, you know, before around the same time as early Hitchcock. But like Hitchcock seemed to have just really like hammered it down and honed it in to a point where it was just like the apex of visual aesthetic, which is interesting, too, because, you know, all those silent film guys had to get really good at that, too. But it was still very early because you don't have, you know, audio for exposition and things like that. But he took it to a whole nother level where it is digestible entertainment, but also something incredibly profound and just masterfully crafted, if that makes sense. Where, again, like I'd mentioned in my little monologue there, like he is what everyone tried to do. And the thing about Psycho is, this was late in his career. Like, I think his last movie was in like 72, and he'd been making movies since like the 20s, right? Or some sort of directorial accomplishments since like the 20s. And with Psycho, it was his biggest hit. It was a very shoestring budget. He had come off doing stuff like North by Northwest and Vertigo. He was at the, you know, commercial Hollywood success level and respected level with those. And Psycho was kind of a turn towards, you had a whole generation of directors, like even like your Roger Cormans and people like that, where that was already trying to imitate him. And he was just like, well, you know, that's great, but here's how it's actually done. This movie was made for like stupid low budget, like very low budget. Janet Leigh got paid like something ridiculous, like $40,000 for this movie. But they just wanted to work with Hitchcock. So if you think about it this way, like it would be like if like the Rolling Stones 90s album Bridges to Babylon was their most iconic record. That's how much time has passed at this point, where like this guy has been around, he's been respected, and it's like, I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm going to do Psycho. He actually bought up the licensing to the novel for like $9,500. And then on top of that, he tried to buy up every single copy of the novel that he possibly could in order to
so
keep the twist, the secret.
Right.
And
it's like
we were saying earlier, it's like, it's almost like you go watch Star Wars and you know that Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father. Right. But at the time that was like fucking, you know, Tim and Eric, when he was like, like the mind-blowing thing. And again, it goes back to what I was saying about context is like at the time and the amount of attempt at keeping this secret and keeping the twist secret, I'll just urge anyone watching Psycho to pretend that they don't know what happens. And it's just absolutely a juggernaut. I never use that word. It's a juggernaut of thrills. Yeah. Well, unless I'm talking about X-Men, I guess I've used that word.
Now, speaking to the commercial success of this, the studio didn't think it was going to do that great. So they actually made a deal with Hitchcock where he got a larger percentage of the receipts than he otherwise would have. And he ended up making out like a bandit on this thing.
Good for him. So he paid for more of the uprent, more of the production costs, probably.
Yeah, something to where he ended up making way more than expected from his end.
What I gather is this was a bit of a passion project where it was like, I've made my mark in Hollywood. I just want to kind of do what I want to do. And I know I have a limited budget. And I think there was like a lot of like TV crew on this movie. It wasn't like your typical roster of like established Hollywood filmmaker type crew.
Right, because he had a show going on.
Did it with the B team, huh?
Yeah, he did it with a B team and again, with a low budget. And, you know, I think like you were alluding to, Daniel, I think the studio was just kind of like, I guess, like, here's some money. It's going to be a bit of a roll of the dice. We're not expecting much out of this. And I mean, similar to what we were talking about with Jaws last time I was on the show, it's just like complete pandemonium, like new benchmark in the history of cinema.
Yeah. Yeah, and that also sounds a little bit like what happened with Desperado with Robert Rodriguez. You know, totally overperformed the expectation, and because of limited budget, he was doing all sorts of things to be innovative and to make things work on the budget he had, so he had to be very ingenious and explore new territory, and I feel like you see some of that with Hitchcock here as well. I guess the shower scene, there was something like 200 cuts between that whole scene, like from different angles and different.
It's
like,
hold on, I got it here. The shower scene was okay. Yeah, so Janet Leigh received $25,000, Anthony Perkins got $40,000, but they just wanted to work with Hitchcock. I swear I had the shower scene, which is 3 minutes long, featured 77 different camera angles in 50 cuts. It took 7 days to shoot, which is insane. Like, it's 3 minutes, but like people have to death picked that whole sequence apart. And if you watch Hitchcock just in general, like he very rarely will cut back to like the same angle or the same composition of the shot. It's like always something different. It's very Kubrick, or Kubrick is very Hitchcock in that sense, is like everything's very meticulous and set up for a reason. It's not just like, you know, shoot and let's move on to the next scene. Like, there's a reason that in the scene with my favorite scene in the movie is when Marion's having dinner with Norman Bates in the parlor, which I believe is the longest scene in the movie. And this like incremental, like I was watching it with my wife the other night. I was like, is he actually creepy, or is that just how people acted back then? Like, I can't figure it out.
Yeah, it's a good question.
But then it kind of like incrementally like gets a little more like red flags. Like, I don't know about this guy. He's in a taxidermy. He's serving me milk with sandwiches. He gets very defensive when she says, you know, let's put your, maybe you should put your mom in a home or something. And that was the watershed moment for his character, I think, arguably. But if you look at that scene, like he's kind of got this aggressive, domineering aspect to his character after that part. And then she stands up in like the angle of the camera is like emasculating of him. And she's like the independent, dominant woman again, like, well, I'm going to bed now. Like, we're done here, kind of thing. And he doesn't push it. He doesn't. And that's the other thing is like, you don't know, like, we know that Marion is we don't know who the protagonist is, because there really isn't one, because Marion's basically a criminal. She stole $40,000 from her employer and is running away to go get married to Sam or whatever she's off to do. And then for a while, we're empathizing with Norman, especially when we don't realize what he's actually up to. We think after the shower scene, he's like, oh fuck, mom's up to her old tricks again. I gotta clean up. That's scary. Clean up the bathroom, you know. So it's all this like subverting of expectations. You like don't know, you know what's happening, but you don't know like where this is going or who to actually relate to or empathize with or root for. And that's all done on purpose, I would argue.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there also is actually a little bit of rewatchability to this, because once you know the story and you know that the mother is a separate persona within him, then you can actually see some of those tricks at play, where Norman's talking to Janet Leigh's character in front of the motel. And you can see she says something along the lines of, I can't believe you let anyone talk to you like your mother talks to you. And he says, well, sometimes you can't speak for other people. You can't change other people. And you can see a reflection of Norman in the window, which almost seems as if it's showing us that he has this split personality. He's actually referring to himself or one persona trying to speak for the other. Like if you listen to what he says and play that back, knowing that he is the split persona, then you can read it a different way.
And that goes back to the Freudian, this is an incredibly Freudian movie. Freud has this thing called the uncanny, which is basically like the doppelganger or like the, you know, the dual personality or like some sort of, you'll see it with like everything, like, you know, even something as, you know, I don't want to say benign, but as, you know, glazed over as like the twins from, it's something creepy about like the two different opposed, characters that look similar or inhabit the same avatar or whatever. And you see that a lot in horror movies where it's like two of something and one of them's maybe a little different than the other, or just both are creepy, but it's still two of the same thing. Again, all very, very Freudian. And then you get into the stuff about the house where like the attic is the super ego, the middle room is the ego, and then the basement is the id and stuff like that. So I don't know exactly where I was going with that, but it's all like very, no pun intended, it's begging to be psychoanalyzed, this movie. The well pun played. Was intended by this.
By Snobby Bobby, everyone. He'll be here all week. Tip your waitress. Robert.
Yes, sir.
Where do you want to take us next? Because you haven't seen the new one, so I'm going to save some of that ammunition for a little bit later so Bobby and I can go through that with you. But is there anything that you wanted to bring up related to this film before we move on too much further? Because we are actually already getting long in the tooth. Mm.
I don't have a whole lot of interesting things. I know I just looked up actor guy. What's the guy's name? I just lost
Anthony
his
Perkins. Tony?
Perkins is IMDb. Because I only knew him from Psycho. Only. And he apparently there are four Psycho movies where he was
five now.
Played. Five.
The fourth
Psycho
one's
movies.
A major TV, I believe.
He's not in the fifth one, the Disney Plus one.
Right, but the one through four he was in. And I wonder if he was a bit typecast. I don't know. He seems like a fair enough actor. It seems like he could do any number of things. I don't know if it was this role was so successful that they were just like, well, no, let's just stick you in this horror category. But it looks like his IMDb has a fair amount of variety in it. But all I knew was from his big horror stuff. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to completely change direction, so you go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, even, you know, a lot of his work prior to this were like a few classic movies that you've probably never seen, a lot of TV from like the 50s, but like I think it's undeniable that Anthony Perkins is like absolutely fucking perfect, and like this performance is absolutely brilliant and for Psycho. So yeah, I'm sorry. It's just, go ahead and shift gears there.
But also that it would be very difficult for him to be anything else or to be known for anything.
Well, yeah, you see him in another movie, unless he was in like a lot of makeup or completely transformed himself. You're like, what's Norman Bates doing in 1800s France or something?
That's what the rumor was, is like Janet Leigh and Anthony Perkins like had no problem being like the people from Psycho. Like they were like totally okay with that being the moment on their career that people know them for. Despite the fact they got paid very little money and, you know,
yeah,
had other work under their belt.
Well, it's kind of like a Mark Hamill type. Like his entire career has been dominated by Star Wars. He's gone on to do all kinds of other voice work and fantastic voice work, but you don't really see him in other like acting roles. He's just Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
He's Joker, but only through the voice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. If you see him.
Because it would be weird. It would be weird to see Luke Skywalker, I don't know, making out with somebody's mom in some comedy or something. It'd just be weird. Right.
Yeah. And you could say the same about Carrie Fisher as well. I mean, she was the mom from The Burbs, I guess. But other than that, she's Princess Leia. And I hate to always bring it back to Star Wars, but that's immediately what I thought of when you were saying that. It's like, yeah, like this is, or fucking Star Trek. Let's do Star Trek. I'm sorry, but Shatner is Captain Kirk. He's right. A lot of other shit.
And he actually just went to the old space.
I don't believe that for a second.
Well, near space.
It's all horse shit.
He saw the curvature.
If it's on TV, it's a lie.
Yeah, 90 years old, man. Wow, it's wild. Oh, and speaking of contemporary references to this film, Jamie Lee Curtis is in Halloween Kills. I guess that's the newest version of the Michael Myers stuff. And to the premiere, she wore her mother's outfit from Psycho.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So that the news.
And apparently they always tried to get her to do the shower scene, but she always refused. And I think she was in Scream Queens, the TV show, and they finally got her to do it. But you think, when I think Scream Queens, I think of Jamie Lee Curtis as like the queen of the queens. But her mother was kind of the godmother of all that, too. Except you can maybe argue Fay Wray and King Kong kind of thing. But as far as like a thriller horror movie, you know. The woman being attacked by the crazed killer, Janet Leigh, Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah. So. And she, man, she was really quite the looker back in the 80s. She's an old lady now. We saw her in, that was someone, Daniel Craig, and they're making a whole bunch of new ones.
James Bond movie?
No, it's, we even did it with.
Knives Out?
Knives Out. Yeah, Knives Out.
Oh, yeah.
She's like all old in that.
Yeah. They're making another one?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think they're making several.
Oh, is it what's
Cash
his name?
Money.
Is it Star Wars Boy?
I think so. The guy who ruined Star Wars?
Yeah.
I did like Knives Out, though.
Yeah,
Knives Out. I like Knives Out.
Yeah.
No, let him do his own thing. Let's not have him just ruin Star Wars.
I mean, a lot of people have ruined Star Wars, including George Lucas. But
yeah, yes. I mean, everybody needs to turn.
I'm picking up what you're putting down here.
It's a team effort. Let's be honest. It's a team effort. Yeah.
Disney ruined Star Wars with their. We're gonna have the new Star Wars. We're gonna have cameos from Anthony Fauci on the Mandalorian next season.
Oh no!
We'll put a nail in that coffin.
Why not?
Chewbacca, don't forget to
get your jab
here. Yeah, they have one of those medical droids, those little balls that float around like in A New Hope.
Use the jab.
Torture droids. Anyway.
Yeah.
Damn, we barely scratched the surface with this one, huh?
Didn't do a whole lot. There's a lot to discuss.
Yeah.
There's a lot to discuss, but there's also not much left to, like, everything that's been said about this movie has been said. And I'm trying my hardest to like have somewhat of original thoughts and insights on this, but it's just for good reason, it's completely been overanalyzed to death and celebrated by so many people, and whether that be audience or other filmmakers and all that. So
yeah, God, also
it's so fucking good.
There's also a series, I think in the about 10 years ago, it was on for 3 or 4 seasons. I think it was called The Bates Motel. I haven't seen it, but it, I think, was considered pretty good. So maybe that's worth checking out for people. I don't know if Psycho 3 or 4 or the new one that just came out is any good. I assume that the new one that just came out is not very good. Due to the disparity in the Rotten Tomatoes ratings they turned off the audience rating, right?
They turned it off at 3%. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember thinking
the critics are like 90% or something.
Psycho 3 is worth a watch if you like Psycho 2, but it's fine.
Okay.
The only thing I know from Psycho 5 is that there's a big portrait of the main subject on the main subject's house wall. Over his workspace, a big.
He has a portrait of himself.
Of himself, yes.
In his office.
Yeah, yeah, and it's all about the humility and humbleness of this great public servant who's just working tirelessly to guide us through the most
this trying time. Absolutely. This
trying time of all, you know, the most difficult time of all.
Sure.
I mean, no megalomaniacal tendencies there.
Certainly not. I'm sure, certainly if there was a proposal to put a statue of him, he would object violently.
Right.
You still talk about Anthony Fauci?
It's Psycho 5.
Oh,
Tony Perkins. Anthony Perkins.
And he works at the CDC.
Yeah.
Or the NIA, whatever
That's
he is.
The NIA. Interesting fan fiction timeline we could go on there, I think.
Yeah. It's going to get weird.
There's all kinds of tendrils. Like, do we
Norman
even
Bates,
get...
give them their AIDS medicines.
Do we get Cars without Psycho? I don't know.
Cars, the Pixar?
No, we
Radiator don't. Springs was off the highway. It was dying because they moved the highway away.
Yeah.
Oh, another nod. Sam Loomis is the name of Donald Pleasant's character in the Halloween series. It's also the hardware store guy in Psycho.
Right. And that has the Jamie Lee Curtis connection.
Yep. Yep.
And let's see. There was something else I was going to... You mentioned Cars, Robert, and that made me think of something. And now it's escaped me because I'm an old man.
Oh, shit.
But yeah, there are a lot of nods. Oh, Cars. Not the movie. But it was weird to me. And maybe there's some...
the technology.
Symbology in this.
Symbology.
They always got out in and out of the car in the passenger door and slid across the bench seat. The... Abergast did it. Janet Leigh's character did it. Hmm. Anytime you saw someone get in and out of a vehicle, it was in the passenger door. Except when she bought the car at the dealership. But when she gets out at the motel, she gets out by sliding across the seat to get out the passenger door. And the private investigator does the same thing. Is there symbolism in that?
Robert, you take that one.
I have no idea. I didn't even notice this. So... you're going to have to, if you have any ideas, it's all you, buddy.
I could usually BS an embellished answer to that, but I got nothing right now.
Okay.
I did want to ask you guys what the bird motif was about. I have ideas, but I don't know if it's.
Yeah, he got into the taxidermy talk and he was not interested in anything other than birds because it was too icky to do beasts or pets.
Mm-hmm.
And Birds, the movie, didn't come out until after this. So I wonder if Hitchcock knew that he was going to be doing the birds and so put it in as a, I don't know, pre-programming.
Yeah,
let's
if I'm
make
going
some birds scary.
If I'm going down my like douchebag college film student profound but not profound interpretation, I think it was some sort of like birds represent like, I guess, like freedom in a way, like he's caged by his own psychosis and within this business. Like, I think he says, like, are you, he kind of, when the PI, the private investigator guy shows up, he's kind of excitedly says something like, oh, are you, you know, you shopping around to buy a new hotel or something like that. Almost like he wants to escape his situation. I think birds are representative of something that can just kind of fly away and do whatever they want. Again, douchebag film student theory there for you guys. You're welcome.
That's actually a level above what we normally offer our audience.
So all right.
Yeah, actually, I read Bates is not wanting to leave the motel. He wanted to stay there. It was his home, and he felt, I guess, safe there, or like that was where he needed to be. And so I didn't read him being excited about that guy looking for motels, but he was coming up with a reason why the guy would be having seen a bunch of hotels and motels and not checking in. So he's like,
sure.
You know,
yeah.
Going through the formalities of human contact and social engagement.
Bates is vaguely based on Ed Gein from, I believe, Wisconsin, who's technically not a serial killer. I think he only killed like two people. But he was known for, he had a very Oedipus complex with his mother. He was a polite young man. Apparently he was very well liked when they finally captured him and put him in a mental institution, like all the other patients there. Thought he was a great guy, but he sparked off the Norman Bates, Texas, and then Leatherface was vaguely inspired by him, as well as Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs, not from American History, but he was very attached to his mother and was into like stuffing things or like creating, you know, furniture and things of that nature out of human flesh. So that's
skin
fun.
Suit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Metamorphosis.
You got to have a hobby, right? A man's got to have a hobby.
Man's got to have a hobby.
A hobby is to divert some time, not devote all of your time to.
That's correct.
Silence of the Lambs is a movie that I've been wanting to do. It has stood out to me as one of my more favorite films. I remember when I first saw it, I watched it back to back. This is back in the days of VHS, so I had to rewind it and wait the 8 minutes for it to rewind totally, and then watch it again because it was really good.
Yep.
Yeah, that might be worth a rewatch. I remember not really being that enthralled by it, but maybe I just didn't appreciate it.
Oh, I watched that movie like once a year. It's great.
Yeah. Speaking of movies we watch once a year, my wife and I, right around this time of year, we watch The Shining. And that's going to tie us right into our next movie, Robert. I'm going to reveal right now that we're going to be doing Dr. Sleep. So we're going to continue the horror tradition, not only with the genre and type of film, but also with the guest we're having next week. It's going to be The Professional Asshole. So a horror on two fronts.
Wait a minute. Is Dr. Sleep that good sequel that I liked?
Yeah, it's the sequel that you liked.
Yeah, that was a good movie.
Yeah, you hated The Shining, but you liked
The Shining is dog shit, but Dr. Sleep was a lot of fun.
Yeah, see, I love The Shining, and I have not yet seen Dr. Sleep. So
you're probably going to think it's bad. You're probably going to think it's like some sort of
abomination. I'm going to be the other end of the spectrum. I love The Shining, and I could not stand Dr. Sleep. So.
Yeah, okay. See, that's. I think there's two different...
I will not
different...
be on that episode, yeah.
Yeah, I think Bobby's... Yeah, I would have suspected Bobby didn't like Sleep, and then I don't think Daniel's going to like Sleep. If you're expecting some kind of Shining sequel that is true to Shining, then yeah, you're not going to like Sleep. If you were to walk into Sleep all not knowing that it's
standalone,
a sequel,
right?
It's some standalone movie, and just enjoy it for what it is, I think you'll have a good time. Mm-hmm. But it makes several allusions, of course, to Shining, so it's tough to think of it as its own movie.
Okay, all right. Well, Psycho 2 is sounds similar in some ways, right? As Bobby was saying. And actually, the allusions in Psycho 2 are they actually replay the entire shower scene. Like the actual, like from the 1960 film is the opening to the 1982 film.
I'm just going to say, if you've recently watched Psycho, I think it's definitely worth your time to just go watch Psycho 2. Just get it over with. It's a lot of fun, especially if the first Psycho's on your mind. Recently.
And if you've got the Peacock, Robert, you can watch your Hitchcock on the Peacock for free.
Yeah, I do got the Peacock now.
Yeah. It didn't have the original, unfortunately. That had to go through Showtime, I think. But it has 2, 3, and 4. And also the Vince Vaughn version.
Yeah, I was recently scrolling through the different free apps that you can get on today's modern TVs. And all these, you know, Tubi and whatever other free things, and just seeing the amount of schlock that is available to watch that you have never heard of. And I doubt you would ever have the time to watch even a tenth of it all, but it's all available to you streaming right now for free.
Yeah.
So enjoy.
This is why I like Amazon over Netflix, because there's no barriers to entry. It's just like, oh, you got a movie? Throw it up on Amazon. I'll watch it. Anyway,
there's a lot out there.
I like a lot of crap.
It's true. He loves the crap.
He loves The Shining. It's true.
Jesus Christ, man! You're the second person I've actually met that has said that to me, and it's like, whatever. Okay.
Yeah, you can just roll your eyes at whatever I say.
Wait, let me ask you this. I don't know if I've ever asked you this. Are you one of those guys that like hates the Beatles?
Hates the Beatles, man! What Twist and Shout's fantastic tune.
Oh, Jesus. I like that scene in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
That's right. Ferris Bueller's Day Off, man.
Matt, maybe.
Donkey Shane.
Yeah.
Darling, Donkey Shane.
Let me ask you guys
this
real quick.
Thank you for Central Park. Anyway.
Do you think that cop was out of line? Do you think his actions were warranted, or was he just a typical highway patrolman that was bored trying to harass a young blonde woman?
Oh, that cop. I thought you were talking about the sheriff. Okay.
What are we talking about? In Psycho?
In Psycho. The first cop. The traffic
when
cop.
When she's sleeping in her car and the traffic cop rolls up on her?
Yeah.
I figured we would tie that into some libertarian themes there, but...
Oh, well, oddly enough, I'll just take over for a moment here, but the rest stops, which were put in when the interstate highways were built. There's about five or six of them between where I live and Everett, so just north of Seattle. All of them being shut down because they've been overtaken by vagrants and there's staffing shortages. So people will have to sleep on the side of the road now.
That used to be like a prime spot for.
They're not safe anymore. I had to sleep in my car. I was afraid of getting the vid if I left my car, officer.
Yeah. Also, the ferry services cutting down their routes by half due to staffing shortages.
Wow.
Some ferry services at those rest stops too.
Definitely, definitely some glory hole ferry services. Actually, yeah, used to live in an area that relied on.
Let it sink in there.
Yeah. 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 Some peacock for Hitchcock. So I used to actually rely on a ferry service when I lived on an island for a while, and I'm glad that I don't now. I mean, part of me wishes I was still there because it was beautiful and separated from the golden hordes of people in the greater Seattle area. But yeah, with
violent left-wing militants.
Yeah, from the Chaz.
Yeah.
But yeah, so a lot of the state-supported infrastructure is being de-staffed and unfunded and closed down to the public. So that's good times. Your tax dollars at work.
Yeah, but what, Daniel, what did you think about the actions of the cop? Was he being overzealous, or did he have probable cause to be basically following her around?
Well, she definitely seemed like she was up to something, and he just didn't know what. She was also pretty boned up on her rights, which seemed to be trampled on more and more every day, to where it seems that at least in 1960, they at least played lip service to it.
And she was a woman not being accompanied by a man.
Yeah. But she was like, am I free to go? Have I done something illegal?
Red flag.
Am I being detained?
Right.
Maybe she's just a libertarian.
But yeah, she did give fishy answers, as did, Norman Bates. When the Abergast was there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. And, you know, that's purposeful, right? It's probably meant to be there so that it builds into the suspense and suspicion as it relates to the film. But it's kind of funny. The Gus Van Sant version, the guy who plays the cop in that one doing the same thing, which is kind of weird because you don't see the cop later after she buys the car.
After the car scene, yeah.
Yeah, we don't see him again, which you'd think that you do because he's sort of set up to maybe return. But anyway, the cop in the Gus Van Sant version looks like identical, just in color.
What does that mean? Identical in color?
Yeah, identical to the 1960 version, except in color.
But in color. Gotcha.
But in color, yeah. Yeah.
He's a person of color.
That's what I thought he was saying.
No,
that's a weird thing to bring up. But okay,
he's an evil white man.
Okay,
he happens to be in a colorized film in 1998.
It's much later time. Gotcha. Okay,
right. So, I think that she was acting strangely and fishy, and also there is a certain amount of understanding of, hey, there's this car parked on the side of the road. This young woman. You want to just make sure things are okay, right? Like if you're a cop and it's kind of your job to like document crimes in a historical aspect, you want to like make sure there's not a dead person in that car or whatever, you know. I would think. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I don't necessarily fault the guy for stopping and checking on a car that's parked on the side of the road. That seems like a thing I could do, just fair and square, fine. But it did seem weird that he was following her to the car lot and thinking something was fishy, that she would be buying a car. I don't know.
Right. And he also had exited prior. So it's almost as if he came upon her again, almost on accident.
Right. It's like, wait a minute. That woman that was sleeping on the side of the road is now buying a car?
Yeah. So I wouldn't say that he was following this. Her. I think that he took interest in... something's not quite right here, but he let it go. And then he ran into her again and was like, okay, this is real weird.
Yeah, could be.
Agreed.
I like how this movie is just it's a morality tale of just have friends that care about you. So when you're murdered by a knife wielding psycho, they'll come and find your dead body. That's heartwarming.
I got you, dog. Don't worry.
Don't worry. When you're murdered by a knife-wielding psycho,
I'll seek out your
the vengeance,
the thing, mystery. And find the mystery. I'll play Scooby-Doo, and mm-hmm. we'll find your dead carcass.
It was Daniel all along.
You know, instead of just actually having a gun, Mr. PI, you know, maybe be armed. So when a knife-wielding psycho comes at you, you could just like shoot him in the face. I don't know.
In the shower, though?
No, when you're climbing up those stairs in the spooky house.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Have a gun out. He have a gun in your hand.
He broke into the house. I had a problem.
He did. Yeah, he did. And when you're breaking into a house.
Yep. That's how you get killed in horror movies.
I sent you a terrible meme about somebody breaking into a house, Robert. Terrible, terrible meme. Friends of mine got kicked out of Facebook groups for that meme.
Oh, really? Did they?
I would like to see that meme.
I'll send you that meme.
We'll get you that meme.
Our relationship is built on memes.
It's a strong meme. It's a strong meme. It can hit close to home. A
little pepper emoji coming your way.
All right. Yeah, it's a spicy one. Fire.
It's definitely
so,
good.
So anyway, I think we're getting close to needing to cut it off here. So how many knife stabs are we going to give this thing? How many
knife stabs did he give her in the shower?
Oh, it was a lot. It was a lot of knife stabs.
It seemed like a lot. She fought off. I was pretty proud of her. She fought off the first couple stabs. Because Norman is not a very imposing dude. No. And like when dude guy finally grabs Norman at the end, I was hey, chick, help the guy out with the knife-wielding maniac, maybe?
I did have that thought as well. Yeah. Well, like,
women's lib, empower yourself? You want to maybe help out?
We weren't there yet.
She's like, no, that's a man's job.
She's also, that woman's not going to pick up the tab either at the diner afterwards.
Yeah.
The 98 version, though, they do empower Julianne Moore's character.
Okay,
in a big way.
Oh, good.
Okay, good.
They
makes it better.
Yeah, it does.
It made it weird. Anyway, I think I'm going to save the differences for the bonus content that will be available for Patreon supporters. Go to lastnighters.com/Patreon and get some bonus content. We were talking with Bobby for about an hour about all sorts of conspiratorial stuff, and we only touched on aliens once. We did not talk about Sam Squanches at all, but lots of other contemporary things, supply chain issues, Psycho 5, a little bit on that. So send some shekels our way, and we will give you access to that. But before we get to that, our Kathleen Turner Overdrive bonus content, let's do the final summary and review. And how many knife stabs in the shower are we going to give this thing? Robert, you want to lead us off?
Sure, I would be glad to. Since I am looking spooky, this is our October spooktacular coming up. Psycho, is it worth watching in 2021? If you haven't seen the movie, absolutely. If you're new to the suspense horror genre, yeah, good place to start. If you just want to see where it all kind of began and you want to get the roots down, and you're like a film historian type person, definitely check it out. I'd be interested to know how some millennial watching this for the first time reacts to it. It is a bit of a slow burn. Like the movies that were made back in the day were made for an audience that was more, less ADD. You know, they're just sitting there in the movie theater. They're kind of in a controlled environment, and they're not struggling to keep your attention at all times. Like your attention is focused on this one thing. You don't have to keep dangling like CGI objects in your face all the time to get you away from looking at your smartphone or whatever today's directors are having to do. So it is a film from another time. It's got all these fantastic, he knew how to tell a story. He knew how to keep you in suspense. He taught us many, many things about filmmaking, showed us how to do it. And it's a prime piece of Hollywood history, Psycho is. And you could watch it today and probably learn something about filmmaking if you are an aspiring filmmaker or just a lover of film. So I would give this 8.5 stabs out of 10. I know Bobby's going to go higher. That's fine. Do it. I have a hard time appreciating it, you know, all over again. I can't forget that I've seen it already a bunch of times. So it's hard for me to appreciate it, remembering the impression that first time. So I'm going to give it eight full stabs. And then she blocks the first stab with her forearm, and then the other eight stabs get her. So it's 8.5 stabs.
Yeah. I think that because it was so indelible in the pop culture and people are already aware of it, especially when we were of age to watch this thing, you already know too much to truly appreciate it. And it's contrasted a bit by Casablanca, which I think has a lot of replayability. Like you can know the story of Casablanca and still appreciate watching it again. Psycho, I mean, I think you can watch again. I'll just keep going here. I think you can watch again and pick up on those subtleties and those visual tricks that kind of let you know that there's more to know about the film once you know the reveal. And it is very well shot, very well edited, very well acted, very well scored, and I think an overall beautiful film. And I think if you compare it to other films of the day, that this really stands out as something different and almost genre, like trend setting within the genre. And it had effects on so many other films and TV shows and pop culture references going forward that without Psycho, we don't have a lot of things that we have today. And it's just really well done. And Hitchcock at his peak of his powers. And Bobby, I think you were saying that this is the one where he sort of was able to have more say in how things were done. So this was him kind of stretching his wings a bit into some territory that maybe he wasn't able to explore before. And I think it's really well done and definitely worth seeing. So I'm going to go with 9 shower stabs for this one. 9 shower rings popping off as the shower curtain gets torn down. And we'll go to you, Bobby.
Okay. This is a good, I would say that like, I watch a lot of, I guess, older or even, you know, black and white movies. And admittedly, I have to kind of get myself in the right mood or kind of amp myself up for it, put on kind of an analytical hat, put on a contextual hat to, and I'm not going to say it's a chore, but obviously it's easier to watch something that was made, you know, during my upbringing or, you know, my generation or whatever. But as far as Psycho goes and really Hitchcock in general, it's a really, really good, I guess, intro or like first tango with old classic Hollywood / black and white movies, because I think it is so timeless. And I think that there is so much to observe about it and appreciate about it. I agree with Robert. It is a bit of a slow burn, especially in the like maybe first act or so, but that does not like, I do not count that as necessarily a bad thing. It does take its time, but every scene, whether it be character interactions or just the way the camera moves or whatever, like every single meticulous choice that's made in this movie, like still keeps it engaging. So I always recommend this one. Is like, if someone's like, hey, what's like, I'm not really versed in like old Hollywood or old movies, what's a good like black and white movie to start with? This is probably at the top of that list. I'm not sure if it's my favorite Hitchcock, but it's definitely right up there. 9.5 stabbies out of 10.
Okay.
It's almost perfect. And then Bitcoin just hit 59, exceeded 59,000 while we were talking, by the way.
Big news.
Breaking news.
All right, Bobby. Well, that's a really good score. And I think that it's a strong recommendation from the three of us. So get out there and watch Psycho. It's on Showtime now or available for purchase at your favorite streaming services where you can make purchases like that. I think it's about $15. The Showtime thing, I actually saw that there's a deal with Paramount Plus and Showtime for, I think, both of them for $10 a month. So that might be worth checking out. I might consider doing that myself. But this has been a really good episode, and I hope that, Bobby, we can coerce you into coming back again sometime to do another film. And I think we've got a lot of potentialities in the running to be that next film. But I've been wanting to have you back on for a while. I know it feels like it was just summertime, and it was Jaws time, and Robert was floating in the water doing a live remote broadcast, making Guinness World Records of most amount of podcasting done in an inner tube on a lake.
Aquatic setting.
Yeah. Aquatic setting, appropriate for Jaws. And so we'll have links to that.
Thanks for not doing this episode from the shower, Robert. We appreciate that.
Man, that's
a very vulnerable place.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Topless, you know, like Randy in Trailer Park Boys, he'd always take his shirt off. And then when he's getting in a fight, he would take his pants off too.
Now I want a cheeseburger.
Cheeseburger walrus. Trailer Park Boys had some good moments there. Anyway, this has been a good episode. You can find the show notes and more at lastnighters.com/199 and get some bonus content at lastnighters.com/Patreon. You can also find links to our guest Snobby Bobby's handle and podcast and website. He does the Not For Everyone podcast. I highly recommend it. It's very well done, very well produced, and they ostensibly review movies for a good 15 to 20% of their runtime.
Nonsense. It is half and half, sir.
The rest of the time, they're giving each other shit and have known each other for a long time, and it's very entertaining and very well done. I am a big fan. I've listened to, I believe, every episode.
Wow.
Of the available. I know that your first five or six or seven.
Yeah, the first available. Eight or so. I think I might put those on the Patreon eventually, but they're just dog shit, and I didn't want them. I don't know. The hardcores might enjoy them, but I can't listen to them.
Well, throw me in the hardcores.
And then also, real quick, I've been guest spotting on a podcast called That One Time I Was Abducted by Aliens pretty regularly, about once a week or so, for a special episode called Bobby's Cryptid Corner, where they let me kind of take the reins and talk about a various cryptid creature that I am fascinated by, and we talk about that and try to debunk or give it credence. So it's a lot of fun, too.
All right, very good. And also, I believe that you guest host with Buck Johnson occasionally on the Counterflow podcast.
Haven't done that in a while. I guest hosted on a couple of his episodes when it was still Death to Tyrants. And then I'm on some of his Patreon episodes where we're just kind of shooting the shit about the news of the day. But that's been a little while. But yeah, I work for Renegade University, Thaddeus Russell's brand. And be on the lookout. There's some really, really good classes coming up at Renegade U, as well as you guys missed it, but make sure you mark it on the calendar for next year. Renegade Weekend was this last weekend. It was a whole lot of fun, and I highly recommend it. If you're on the fence about going, just bite the bullet and go. And I will drink beers with you if you do that. I don't know if that's a selling point or not, but it'll happen.
They might keep a few people away, but maybe attract more than it'll repel. But Bobby, we always have great fun with you, and send me some links you want me to throw up on the show notes page, and we will do that. And I will continue to avidly listen to your podcast. You and Adam are hilarious, and I enjoy it very much.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for the Last Nighters here. So you can find the show notes more at lastnighters.com/199. Are you out of your mind? And you can also check us out next week as we do the sequel to The Shining, and that is Dr. Sleep, which I'm not going to like, and Robert is going to like. And we're going to have the professional asshole making his triumphant return for that episode. So until then, stay spooky, everyone. It's a Halloween period. Wear the scary mask this Halloween of no mask at all. It's going to freak out the liberals. And enjoy yourselves until we see you again next week. And we'll say goodnight from last night, everyone. Peace out. All right, and a few more minutes on the actual Anarchy podcast, and I think that Bobby is taking a little Bobby break for just a moment here. But Robert, any final things that you thought of that you were like, damn it, I wish I'd said that during the Last Nighters portion, but here we are in the not Last Nighters portion, and now you can bring it up.
Well, I just like how Norman was undone by the power of family and friendship. It's by people who he murdered a lady that people cared about. And so it's important to foster those relationships. It didn't save her, of course. Like, having a firearm would have saved her. Locking the damn door when she is taking a shower, it's probably a strong idea. But yeah, Norman probably would have kept getting away with it if not for concerned people. So who just cared about her and wanted to make sure they could find her or see if she was still alive or whatever, wanted to find her. So, be good to your friends and family. Maybe they'll come after your dead carcass, but it's more important to take care of your own safety.
Check in.
Yeah. Check in. Let people know where you're going. And don't steal $40,000 or in the updated version, $400,000 because inflation's not a thing, right?
I did like that the guy, that the Texan guy who was the asshole Texan guy, like had $40,000 because he didn't declare his income. I like that.
Yeah. I like that guy a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. That guy like was solid.
Asshole Texan that evades the IRS is my people.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
Like, I don't know if we can take cash for this real estate deal.
It's like, why not? It's my private cash. What's wrong with you?
Yeah. Yeah. Man. Yeah. I feel like we barely scratched the surface on that one, but that was fun. I think there's potentially more freedom theme stuff to talk about on that one, but that's one of them is that guy. That guy is who we all should strive to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Having $40,000 to plunk down on a piece of property as a gift to your daughter who's getting married. That's a pretty boss thing to do.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
And in the 98 version, a mere, 38 years later, it's $400,000.
He's just got that. Is this 400 grand in cash that he's buying a house with?
Yep. Same deal. Same deal. Nice. Though there's really no way that they can fit the 400,000 in the newspaper, but
whatever. Yeah. What's up with that?
Yeah. And what would it be now? Like $4 million? It's been another, probably, 24 years since then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of differences between the films, and then we probably got to wind this one down pretty quickly here because it's already been an hour and a half. But Robert, this is mostly between Bobby and I, because Bobby, you've seen the Van Sant, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I started it out of morbid curiosity, but it was just on the background after about 20 minutes. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, there's a certain amount of soul that I think gets imbued into a film by the craft makers, and Van Sant, I think, technically repeats a lot of the same scenes and editing and all of those things, but it feels saccharine. It feels almost fake, and because it's in color, it also loses that element, that nostalgia. I almost wish he had done it in black and white, because I think it would have played a little bit better.
I feel like that would have been a little too on the nose, and I think that's ultimately the problem. Is like, you know, if you're going to remake something, that's fine. I mean, obviously, The Thing is like one of my favorite movies of all time, and that's a remake. But like that, like I can't think of anything else that was remade that was like trying to do pretty much exactly the same thing.
Like the mimicry of it, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing with the remake is like you have to put your own updated spin on it, other than just like it's in color and stars Anne Heche and Vince Vaughn. Like that's not going to do. And remakes are a weird thing because they always try to remake good movies because it has like marketability and like has draw, like, oh, I remember the original. Let's go see how they fuck up this one kind of thing. But I always say like what they should do is take movies that have good concepts that weren't particularly well received originally and try to remake those. I think that would be a more just approach to the remake. But, you know, I'm a free market guy, so. You know, if they run the numbers and say, hey, looks like there's a big demand for a new Ghostbusters movie with a lot of ladies in it, we should go with it. And then we get the 2016 classic starring that lady from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
So the early reviews are in for the new Ghostbusters, though.
Yeah, I heard it.
the reviews have been positive that I've seen.
I read one in The Guardian that was about how like it's like pandering to the like incel crowd that disparaged the 2016 one. I'm like, oh, this one sounds like it's going to be pretty good then. It was like from The Guardian, it was like one star.
That's exactly what I want. What I want.
It's like what they said with Joker, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Joker was great. Even though I've only still seen it the one time in the theater, and I own it. I own is a weird term now, especially when you own nothing and love it.
You'll be happy,
but I haven't seen it again since. I also own Dr. Sleep, haven't seen it. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, own it, haven't seen it. Ford versus Ferrari, own it, haven't seen it. There's so many movies like that, and I almost feel bad because there are the collection that I have that Robert, I think you have access to like 90% of it. I haven't seen a lot of them, and it, you know, each one
are these hard copies?
No, they're digital, and they're at least $5 and sometimes up to like $20, depending on when you buy them and if they're on sale and whatnot. And there's something like 400 films in there. So it's not cheap. So I've tried to slow down.
Yeah, I hear you, man. Shit. I've been doing the thing where like I was in a bad phase of just buying DVDs that I heard about on a podcast or read about, like weird shit. Like,
I do that with books.
I'm kind of a tangible collector. I like to have the actual hard copy with the cover art and everything. But there was a habit where I was like, I was getting a DVD or a Blu-ray like once a week. I'm like, this shit is adding up real fast financially. So
yeah,
trying to cut back on that. But I hear you, though. It's nice to have access. And I got a big stack of DVDs still in the cellophane that I'm never going to get around to watching. And a big stack of books on anarchy and Sasquatches that I've read bits and pieces of. But who knows if I'll ever sit down and finish them. It's just one of those things.
You know what you need? You need
junkies.
You need a pandemic that says you can't go out.
Right. Well, you know,
watch that stuff and read that stuff.
I did some of that. I did catch up quite a bit during that time and during this time. How's the state of things in Washington as far as like, I don't know, restrictions, and are people going to shame you if you're not masked anymore? Or
I think where Robert is different from where I am, but
yeah, it's massively different. One side of the mountains or the other, you got like nanny state mask Nazis versus like just people who want to be free.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now I live
completely cultural.
I live near a town that's fairly Christian conservative and they're pretty good about things. But if you go any other town on this side, it is, it's very limiting. You feel the boot heel on you a little bit.
I've been curious about, there's a town that's on the, Post Falls, Idaho, just east of Spokane, or Hayden, Idaho. That's what I'm looking for. I just need something with like maybe 50,000 to 70,000 people that like just does not seem to give a shit. That's what I'm looking for. But I just think there's too much influence from the progressive utopia that is Washington and Oregon State to bleed into Idaho somehow, but we shall see.
Yeah, well, I think Idaho's experiencing a lot of what Texas is experiencing and what Washington went through like 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Yeah,
the California flood.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because
we almost moved to Bend a few years ago just for fun. We're like, we should just move to Bend because it looks awesome. And then everyone's like, no, that's just overtaken by Californians now. So
yeah, it is great. I mean, it was great. I've got a friend who lives there now and I've spent a little bit of time there. And but yeah, it's got your microbreweries and progressive politics and bar shootings. Anyway, there's a couple of things I wanted to bring up about the differences between the 60 version and the 98 version.
Okay.
That I thought were interesting because you got a shot for shot remake that kind of loses the soul of it and it's in color, but they changed a few other things. And I think these are maybe purposeful in a cultural grooming way. It's a little bit strange. So in the original version, you have the church scene where Sam and Lila go and talk to the sheriff again, thinking something's going on up at the motel. That scene does not exist in the 98 version. When Norman looks at the people at the lady in the shower, or before she gets in the shower, in the original version, he's just peeping and, you know, it's creepy and weird. In the Vince Vaughn version, he is whacking off briefly, so that they, you know, change that, make it a little even creepier, pseudo-sexual, whatever. The end, the discussion by the psychologist talking about Norman having two personalities and now the dominant one is the mother and Norman is not coming back. They actually talk about what a transvestite is and he gets into the definition of it because one of the guys, like the mayor, is like, oh, he's dressing up like a woman, he's a transvestite. And the psychologist is like, no, a transvestite is somebody who dresses up as a woman, but for other purposes than what Norman's going through. Norman actually has an actual split where he believes he is this other person who happens to be female. That's removed from the 98. And then we also have the sister who in this original is more of a, she helps Sam kind of, but Sam's like the main hero as far as subduing Norman and whatnot. In the newer one, Julianne Weird Walking Moore is an empowered feminist woman who, hear her roar, She will not be left at the hardware store while Sam goes to investigate. She will lead the charge and leave without him. And so he'll reluctantly come along. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought that there were some cultural changes and shifts that were due to the times. And I don't know if that is indicative of a reaction to the times or to push things to be different.
An agenda.
With the time. Yeah.
So what would it look like today?
I don't know, man. I think it would be very different.
Well, that's what I thought. I thought we would maybe touch on it, but it never came up. But like, I'm wondering if that would be approached much differently with the whole like LGBTQ thing. And you look at a lot of even horror movies in the 80s, like, I don't know, Nightmare on Elm Street 2 is very like, not even secretly gay. It's pretty overtly gay, but like at the time, only the gays knew that it was gay, that kind of stuff. And then like you look at gender bending stuff with like Sleepaway Camp, another slasher from the 80s. I don't want to spoil it. And there's people going back now saying, you know, this is kind of a disrespectful minstrel show version of, you know, our struggle or whatever. And then, I mean, I'm sure there's someone out there like trying to cancel like Mrs. Doubtfire or something like that.
Or Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah. So I would say, I don't think that, sadly, I don't know if it would be approved to be made. If like Psycho never existed and the script came along in 2021, they said, we want to make this. I don't know if that would get green.
Yeah. I feel like it would get canceled. And Bobby, I think you're frozen. I can see Robert's eyes moving.
Yeah, Bobby is frozen to me.
Okay. Well, let's wind it down there. We've got you right in the right position there, Bobby. You are completely frozen. But you do a great show usually, and you were a great guest for us. And people can check out your stuff at the Not For Everyone podcast and follow you at Liberty Nelson, LIBERT Nelson on the old Twitter for as long as you are not canceled from there. And we will see you next week, everyone, for Dr. Sleep with a Professional Asshole. You can find the show notes and more for this episode at actualanarchy.com/256. And with that, we will wish you maximum freedom and see you all next week. Peace out.
Chipmunks. CHIPMUNK. We're the chipmunks. Guaranteed to brighten your day. Do, 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 do.